Welcome to this edition of the Pepperdine People Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gibson. This series captures some of the outstanding learning and outreach opportunities available here at Pepperdine. Each episode features interviews with exceptional members of our community and the special people who visit our campus.
Thank you for joining us for episode 12 of Pepperdine People. I'm John Struloff, Director of Creative Writing at Pepperdine University, and I'm joined today by the poet C.K. Williams. C.K. Williams is the author of 10 books of poetry, the most recent of which is Collected Poems, 2006. The Singing won the National Book Award for 2003, and a previous book, Repair, was awarded the 2000 Pulitzer Prize and the Los Angeles Times Book Award. His collection, Flesh and Blood, received the National Book Critics Circle Award. Williams has also published a memoir, Misgivings, My Mother, My Father, Myself, in 2000, and has published translations of Sophocles' Women of Trachis, Euripides' Bacche, and poems of Francis Ponge, among others. A book of essays, Poetry and Consciousness, appeared in 1998. Recently, he was awarded the 20th Annual Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize, an honor given to an American poet in recognition of extraordinary accomplishment. Among his honors are awards in literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the Penn Volcker Career Achievement Award, and fellowships from the Lila Wallace Foundation, the Guggenheim Foundation, and the National Endowment of the Arts. He was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters in 2003 and teaches in the writing program at Princeton University. Mr. Williams, welcome to Pepperdine.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you here with us today and looking forward to the reading in just a little while.
Good.
Many of our listeners are young poets. Could you talk some about your early discoveries about poetry and poetry writing that helped you move forward as a poet?
Well, the earliest, the important discoveries one makes all one's life are the poems of other poets, obviously. The first poets that struck me particularly were Baudelaire and Rilke, and then I had a terrific course at university in Yeats and Eliot. And all through my career, what's been most important to me is finding masters, really always having masters, people I'm learning from, people who, when I read their poems, I think, how did they do that? And then study them until I can get an idea of how they can do that. And the first thing you think when you come across a poet you admire is, I'll never be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you have to accept that as part of the game.
Yeah. Are there particular aspects of their writing or maybe their exploration of a literary terrain that you were looking for or anything like that?
Well, when you read Baudelaire, he really turns the world upside down, because basically what he says is that what is apparently ugly and repulsive can in fact be beautiful. Mm-hmm. And he transforms. And Rilke continues to transform. To an even more radical way, Rilke transforms the physical to the metaphysical. Mm-hmm. Yeats, for me, really was the entry into the English tradition of poetry. When I read him, I think he might be the best poet who ever wrote in English, but then I often exaggerate to myself that way. But he was certainly one of the best. Mm-hmm. And he was a way to get in and to begin to go back and find out how he got where he is. And in order to understand where he was, you have to know the rest of English poetry, really, and then a lot of the world of poetry. So one is always following paths.
Yeah, yeah. Much of your early writing was in response to the civil rights movement and the war in Vietnam. Some of your recent work has been in response to the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks and the war in Iraq. You know, I'm thinking in particular of like the poems War from The Singing. As a poet, what has changed for you since those early writings? You know, sort of the same topic, but I don't know, different stage in life, different atmosphere.
Well, the world doesn't seem to change much. I think in my early poems, people exaggerate how much of my early poetry was in response to social and cultural events, political events. I think in my early poetry, I still maintain the naive belief that poetry could change the world and that if people just could understand what you were telling them, they would immediately come to their senses and do the right thing instead of the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And one learns, unfortunately, rather quickly that that's not the case, and you learn it painfully. Yeah. People tell you you're doing too much of this or too much of that, too much propagandizing, too much proselytizing. And my awareness and my concern with all those issues never faltered. It really can't falter. Once you begin to think about the world that way, you can't stop. But the way I put it in my poems has varied over the years. Sometimes I put things into what I call the unconscious of the poem so that there's nothing directly said about what the poem is concerned with. And sometimes it seems more appropriate to directly or almost directly actually say what you want to say. Mm-hmm. Or scream what you want to scream, yeah. Which is what you feel like.
Yeah. And you'll see that kind of thing in the slam poetry or performance poetry now where they're really often political in nature.
Yeah, good.
And loud. They want you to hear it. While I was at Stanford University for 2 years as a Wallace Stegner Fellow in Poetry, I worked with Yvonne Boland, the noted Irish poet. She challenged us young poets with the bold claim, and I think maybe it was more of a challenge or a question to us, that American poets and society have a very clear divide in their sense of the public and the private in poetry. Irish poets and, say, Polish poets, you know, after the Holocaust, have suffered communally, and this has merged their sense of the public and private in poetry. When they talk about their private lives, they can't help but speak to the public suffering. In the U.S., she suggested, we don't have that same capacity, that same sort of trait here. What do you feel about this topic?
It's a tricky topic because I've never been Polish or Irish, but several of my best friends are one, Adam Zagajewski is a great Polish poet, is one of my best friends, and Paul Muldoon is a great Irish poet, is one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. I don't know about that. I felt that I don't quite see how an Irish poet suffers in the same way that a Polish poet suffers. The Polish poets until 1989 mm-hmm. were living in essentially a dictatorship and a very repressive dictatorship. And they suffered actively from in their daily lives. The Irish poets had a different kind of suffering. Their suffering was really more conceptual, mm-hmm. you know, that they're involved in a struggle against both colonialism and the response to colonialism, which was violence. And I think that if she's going to make that kind of division, I would say that American poets are pretty close to Irish poets and that we live in a society that's fragmented and fractured in so many ways. And if you're going to walk around with your eyes open, mm-hmm. you can't help but suffer from the injustices and the sheer absurdities of what's happening in America, what's always happened in America, racism, classism. Yeah. I mean, for the last 30 years since the beginning of the age of Reagan, we've watched the middle class basically being dismembered and destroyed and disempowered, and the upper class is really taking control and creating a society that suits them, and now it's all falling apart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you're conscious, you're suffering in the same way that poets anywhere are suffering. Obviously, it's more extreme if you're an Egyptian poet and in prison with shackles on you because you dared to say something against the Egyptian government. You're suffering in a more dramatic and more painful way. Mm-hmm. But once you accept an aesthetic of poetry as one that deals with human suffering. And that's not necessary to do that. There's a lot of great poetry that doesn't at all take that into its concern. But once you do, you begin feeling pain. You begin feeling indignation. You begin feeling disorganization within yourself. You know, how can I live this way when so much patently wrong is going on in my society? How can I sit at a desk and worry about how many syllables there are in a line?
Mm-hmm. I think she was making that claim to try to draw that out of us, to get mm-hmm. us thinking about that. And mm-hmm. you know, and maybe she feels like it. She would like it to be more present in U.S. poetry.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like 9/11 has changed our communal sense? You know, that the sense of the divide between the private and the public. Maybe shrinking since then in this country.
I never felt that 9/11 was as catastrophic an event as it was made out to be. It was a terrible thing, and it was a terrible thing that a lot of people died. But I live in France part of the time, and in France we've had various times when there were terrorist attacks, and the government basically took the opposite direction from the one here. It was, don't be afraid. It's something that happens. We live with it. We've lived with it always. While here, 9/11 was taken by our quite reactionary government as a way to instill fear in people and as a way to give the government more power to. And I resent it a lot. I resent the deaths of those people being used that way. Even yesterday, I was in an airport, and they're talking about the security level is orange. What does that mean, the security level is orange? Watch out for packages, you know, suspicious packages. Well, in Paris, you're in the subway, and it says, watch out for suspicious packages, but it doesn't say the security level is orange. The security level is orange implies that there's a cosmic threat to our existence. It's not that there might be a bomb somewhere and it might go off, but that we cosmically, emotionally have to be a tremble because of these things. So I resent very much the way 9/11 was used. And, of course, one of the results of 9/11 was the Iraq War, which shouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm. To shift topics some, you are known stylistically for your very long lines in your poems. What do you feel this offers you as a poet?
I'm not writing that many long line poems anymore. They offered me when I first began to write them, they offered me a way to get more of my actual life and thought into the poems instead of writing what I call codes from one poet, from a poet to a reader or one poet to another. There's a lot of taking away of what actually goes on in one's consciousness. And so the long lines allowed me to put more of myself in. It was just sort of a dimension that suited me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In light of National Poetry Month, how do you understand the relevance of poetry in society today?
I don't understand it. I never have understood it. It's something that's there, and it's something that some people turn to with incredible passion. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have thoughts about how poetry could become a more active part of everyone's life or more people's lives. And I think there's a lot of people who think about that. And there's definitely more awareness and attachment to poetry now than when I was in university 50 years ago, for instance. There's much more, many more poets, many more people reading poetry. It's still a kind of cult. There's nothing else that it is. I once used to have the thought that if we could begin every high school English class with a recording of a poem or the reading of a good poem, mm-hmm. and just leave it at that, don't talk anymore about the poetry. I think often talking about poetry can really dull one's appreciation of it. Mm-hmm. So I worry about too much talking about poetry.
Yeah, trying to extract meaning always from it.
Yeah,
rather than just absorbing it and responding to
whatever is there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about all this. I've been thinking about it since I started writing poetry, and I really don't come to any conclusions.
All righty. Okay, well, thank you. That's our time for today, and I really appreciate you talking with me.
Thank you.